right here on VOA.
I'm VOA's Joe Ramsey with your worldwide news update. Joe Biden used his final presidential address before the United Nations General Assembly to urge unity in the face of challenges, including conflicts in Ukraine, Gaza, and Sudan. VOA White House correspondent Anita Powell reports from New York.
Hope, unity, and service. President Joe Biden's parting message to world leaders in his final speech to the United Nations General Assembly on Tuesday. But it was this line about his decision not to seek re-election that garnered the most applause from the audience, which included leaders from the body's 193 member states.
My fellow leaders, let us never forget, some things are more important than staying in power. It's your people.
Washington's strong support of Israel has tested its standing at the UN, where many members are critical of Israel's action, both in Gaza and now in Lebanon. On Tuesday, the head of the international body warned of what he called politically indefensible and morally intolerable impunity. This annual event is a chance for the world's governments to discuss shared challenges and shared visions. The big question now, from Gaza to Ukraine to Sudan, what are they going to do about it? Anita Powell, VOA News, New York.
U.S. officials say the Biden administration will send Ukraine an undisclosed number of medium-range cluster bombs and an array of rockets, artillery, and armored vehicles in a military aid package totaling about $375 million. Officials expect an announcement on Wednesday as global leaders meet at the UN General Assembly, and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky uses his appearance there to shore up support and persuade the U.S. to allow his troops to use long-range weapons to strike deeper into Russia. This is VOA News. Israel's military said an airstrike on Beirut killed the commander of Hezbollah's missile and rocket force on Tuesday as cross-border attacks by both sides increased. Lebanese officials claim more than 500 people have been killed since Israel launched heavy strikes on Monday. Reuters correspondent Emma Jaley reports.
Israel's military leader said the Air Force also conducted extensive strikes on Hezbollah targets, including weapons storage facilities and dozens of launchers that were aimed at Israeli territory. Hezbollah said it launched rockets on Tuesday at the Dado military base in northern Israel and attacked the Atlit naval base south of Haifa with drones. Israel's new offensive against Hezbollah has stoked fears that nearly a year of conflict between Israel and the militant Palestinian group Hamas in Gaza could destabilize the Middle East.
Reuters correspondent Emma Jaley. A Haitian group in a town in the U.S. state of Ohio on Tuesday filed citizen criminal charges against former President Donald Trump and his running mate J.D. Vance. AP correspondent Haya Bandwani reports.
The leader of a national nonprofit representing Haitians has filed criminal charges against Trump and Vance over chaos and threats experienced in Springfield, Ohio, after they spread false claims about legal immigrants. Their lawyer says the Haitian Bridge Alliance filed the charges under a private citizen statute because local prosecutors haven't acted. The group seeks arrest warrants against Trump and Vance. More than 30 bomb threats were directed at state and local government buildings and schools, prompting closures, the assignment of additional law enforcement protection, and security cameras. Some of the city's Haitian residents have also said they feared for their safety. I'm Haya Pinjwani.
Charges brought by private citizens are rare but not unheard of in Ohio. State law requires a hearing to take place before the affidavit can move forward. The man who authorities say staked out Donald Trump for 12 hours on his golf course in Florida and wrote of his desire to kill him was indicted on Tuesday on charges he attempted to assassinate the former U.S. president. Ryan Wesley Routh was initially charged with two federal firearms offenses. The upgraded charges reflect the Justice Department's assessment he plotted to kill the Republican nominee, aiming a rifle through bushes surrounding Trump's West Palm Beach golf course while Trump was playing golf. Routh left behind a note in which he described his intention. That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
attacks Israel with a barrage of missiles.
Alarms sounded across Israel and sent people scrambling for shelter.
The U.S. military assisted Israel in repelling the attack.
U.S. Navy destroyers deployed to the Middle East region supported the defense of Israel by firing approximately a dozen interceptors against the incoming Iranian missiles.
And Claudia Sheinbaum makes history, becoming Mexico's first female president.
Protesto, guardar y hacer guardar la constitución política de los Estados Unidos Mexicanos.
Today is Wednesday, October 2nd.
And this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Scott Walterman.
And I'm Alexis Strobe.
Go! 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 Go!
An Iranian missile attack on Tel Aviv as ballistic missiles fired by Iran landed on Tuesday. Retaliation for Israel's campaign against Tehran's Hezbollah allies in Lebanon. With sirens blaring and air defenses intercepting the missiles, alarms across Israel sent people scrambling for their air raid shelters.
Iran's Revolutionary Guard Corps said the missile salvo was in retaliation for recent Israeli killings of military leaders and aggression in Lebanon and Gaza. Israel said about 200 missiles were launched. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said Iran's missile attack on Israel failed and vowed retaliation at the start of a security meeting in Tel Aviv Tuesday night.
Netanyahu saying Iran has made a big mistake. U.S. President Joe Biden said Iran's attack was ineffective. In Tehran, people celebrating the bombardment, hoisting posters of the recently assassinated Hezbollah leader, Hassan Nasrallah. Palestinians in the Gaza Strip also celebrated as the rockets headed toward Israel.
The missile strikes come after Israel said its troops launched ground raids into Lebanon, which it had described as limited. But a ground campaign into Lebanon for the first time in 18 years, pitting Israeli soldiers against Hezbollah, Iran's best armed proxy force in the Middle East, would be a major regional escalation. The Lebanese health ministry said more than 50 people were killed and more than 150 wounded in Israeli attacks across Lebanon on Tuesday.
VOA's Linda Grantstein was in Jerusalem during the attack. She spoke with VOA's Steve Miller about what it was like.
Can you give our listeners some perspective as to where they were fired? Where were the targets? Because as I was sitting here in my office outside Washington, D.C., I was watching the feeds of the missiles in Tel Aviv. You're in Jerusalem, and you know I also see reports that perhaps elsewhere there were some targets.
Yeah, so they really covered most of the country, this from except for the extreme north near the Lebanese border and the south near the Gaza border. But they covered most of the country, and it's almost like watching kind of a fireworks show. You see the missile, you can see it coming. It's then intercepted by either the Israeli Iron Dome system or by either Jordan or the United States, and then it kind of dissolves into shrapnel, which then falls to the ground. Now, the shrapnel can also be quite dangerous, and in fact, the person who was killed, the Palestinian in the West Bank, was killed by the shrapnel, which also did some property damage in Tel Aviv. Jerusalem is rarely a target, although this time it was, and we were in our bomb shelter, which is a room in our house. Newer Israeli buildings are all built with a bomb shelter. You close the window and you close the door, and it's meant to be able to withstand a rocket attack, so even if there was a direct hit on my apartment building, the bomb shelters would still remain intact. And we were in the bomb shelter for about 45 minutes. Usually it's up 10 minutes, and then you're told that you can leave, but I think they wanted to make sure that it had actually finished.
Now, was this just one wave of missiles coming from Iran, or were there multiple waves?
There were multiple waves over maybe 10, 15 minutes, and it's quite dramatic. If people don't have a safe room in their house, they're told to go to, there's supposed to be a communal safe room in every building, and if there isn't for whatever reason, then they're told to stay in a stairwell, with no windows, so that if there is shrapnel and the windows, are shattered, that they wouldn't get hurt.
One last thing, Linda. I want to turn our attention to something that happened earlier in the day outside Tel Aviv in Jaffa. Mm-hmm. Reports of a terrorist attack. What can you tell us about what we know about those events?
Well, two gunmen apparently were on the light rail, which is an underground train at that point, in Jaffa, which is a suburb of Tel Aviv that's actually a mixed Arab-Jewish city, small city, as far, just on the outskirts of Tel Aviv. They came off the train and apparently were carrying their weapons openly and I guess looked like Israeli soldiers or security forces who walk around with weapons, even often in civilian clothes. And they came out onto the street at a bus stop and just started shooting, and six people were killed and several more wounded. And it's the most serious attack on Israel taking responsibility. So it's not clear if this was completely separate from the Iranian missile strike or if it was somehow connected.
Linda Gradstein reports for VOA from Jerusalem in Israel. Linda, thank you so much for your reporting, and please continue to stay safe.
Thank you very much.
Linda Gradstein in Jerusalem, speaking with VOA's Steve Miller.
During the attack, the U.S. military coordinated closely with the Israeli Defense Forces to help defend Israel.
Pentagon spokesperson Major General Patrick Ryder, he said on Tuesday that two U.S. Navy destroyers fired about a dozen interceptors against Iranian missiles. Let's get more on this now. Joining us from the Pentagon is VOA's Pentagon correspondent, Carla Babb. Carla, thank you for joining us today. We're talking about the missile strikes from Iran into Israel, and it was about double from what we're told of the strike from April, so roughly 200 missiles fired into Israel. And the IDF says it was a U.S.-led defensive coalition in Israel that took down most of those missiles. So what was the U.S.'s position in this defensive coalition?
Well, the U.S. said that it had positioned itself to be ready for a potential attack. The U.S. this week had ordered a few thousand additional forces into the Middle East to provide more air power that could protect American forces in the region and Israel if needed. They had three additional aircraft squadrons, F-15s, F-16s, A-10s, arriving in the region. U.S. officials told me, in fact, that one of those squadrons had already arrived before the attack. The U.S. has said it will continue to consult closely with Israel on the next steps. I was told at the briefing that two U.S. destroyers, USS Cole and USS Bulkley, fired about a dozen interceptors against the incoming Iranian ballistic missiles during the attack. Israeli defenses, as you mentioned, intercepted a large number of these missiles. Some, I've been told, some did strike Israeli territory. No Israeli casualties have been reported at this point. But keep in mind, this ballistic missile attack was much more intense than the previous attack. The previous attack that Iran had conducted in April, they were also using drones, dozens and dozens of drones and cruise missiles. Ballistic missiles are much harder to intercept. This is a much more serious attack, and the U.S. has said that should Iran try further attacks, that there would be severe consequences.
And they didn't say what those severe consequences would be in terms of the U.S. participating in an offensive, or is the U.S. maintaining a defensive posture for Israel?
No, the U.S. has always said that it has a defensive posture in the region, and it always reserves the right to defend its forces. We have seen, however, Israel launch this incursion into Lebanon. The U.S. has made clear that they are not taking part in this incursion. In fact, Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin was caught off guard by the attack over the weekend that killed Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah. He was caught off guard by that, and as President Joe Biden was calling for a ceasefire, Israel was in fact, starting that incursion into Lebanon. So definitely some friction that you can see just from the outside looking in. There has definitely been some friction between the U.S. and Israel. But the U.S. says that it remains committed to helping defend Israel throughout this increased tense period. And they are calling on both sides to decrease tensions to prevent this from turning into an all-out war.
Carla, thank you very much for the insight today.
Thank you.
VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb.
Okay, so let's go big picture. This is a significant escalation in the war that's been ongoing since the October 7th Hamas attack, just about a year ago now. The Middle East is a complicated web of alliances and delicately balanced power structure. Joining us now to help sort out what we've seen over the past few days and its potential impact on the region is Alex Fatenka. He's the founding director of the Iran program at the Middle East Institute. It doesn't seem like anyone is really surprised about where we are right now.
Well, look, I think the Iranians had hoped that their volley of missiles at Israel middle of April would have recreated this sort of deterrence, and that Israel and Iran would go back to respect their respective red lines. That hadn't happened in the last few weeks. Haniyeh's assassination in July and then Nasrallah's, the Iranian regime was put in a very awkward position if they didn't do anything, and that was the inclination. They really didn't want to retaliate. They know that that brings the risk of war, not with Israel, but Israel's main backer, the United States. And that's the last thing the Iranian regime wants to engage in, war with the United States. So for that reason, they had held back. We saw that with Iran not really doing anything in retaliation against the killing of Haniyeh. But as the Israelis kept pushing on and saying that, you know what, this war is going to continue till all our enemies are dead, The decision clearly has been made in Tehran that they just couldn't sit there and do nothing. And that's what they have done. And I think largely, if I had to guess, this is also rooted in Iranian calculation that the United States still will not back Israel up in the sense of engaging together with Israel in an all-out war with Iran. So the Iranians have calculated, this is a built-in part of their sort of expectation, that they will likely be an Israeli response to these latest missiles that Iran aimed at Israel, but that Iran can take the blow the way it did when Israel hit their one of their army bases in Isfahan in April. So I don't think the Iranians would have done what they have done here today if they were leaning in terms of expectations on the notion that the United States would come in, side with Israel, and go out and start striking Iran. That seems to have been a important factor for why Iran did what they did today.
And what do you think Israel is thinking?
Look, the Israelis have said that they're going to retaliate. Will the United States hold them back? It remains to be seen. I suspect, Israel with the United States is much stronger in terms of hitting some of those strategic sites in Iran. And that's the only thing Israel can do. I mean, obviously, nobody's expecting the IDF to show up on Iranian soil. So what we're talking about here in terms of Israeli revenge, we're talking the usual suspects, an array of air campaigns targeting strategic sites. There are calls for, Iran's oil facilities, nuclear facilities, other sensitive military facilities to be targeted, not just by Israelis, but also some folks here in the United States, including Senator Graham, have been calling for that. I'm sure others will echo that kind of sentiment. You can also expect what the Israelis are very good at, because they have the intelligence sort of upper hand and able to carry out some high-profile assassinations and targets inside of Iran. They've done it in recent years. They can do that again. But again, if Israel had the United States on its side, as part of a strategy to go all the way to Tehran, to decapitate the Islamic Republic's leadership, then we would be, looking at a campaign on the part of Israel, U.S., that the Iranian regime would fear, obviously, far more than just Israel acting on its own. Look, that all said, I don't see any signs that the Biden administration has any desire to get anything, to get into anything that looks like a regional war, or open warfare with the Islamic Republic. And I think that's important to keep in mind when we think about what Israel realistically is likely to do on its own.
Let's talk geopolitically. Does this change the dynamic, what's happening in what, not the attack and the counterattack, but what in a bigger picture sense, where Israel has really inflicted damage on Hezbollah, they have also on Hamas. You have Iran, because their proxies has reputationally has been hurt. Is there a shift happening in the Middle East in terms of this power struggle?
Look, there is obviously a shift. The killing of Hassan Nasrallah and the damages that Israel has brought upon Israel are no small matters. They're pretty significant. Hezbollah is Iran's biggest investment in terms of a proxy organization that Iran has invested in 42 years. So when Hezbollah is as badly damaged as it has been in the last few weeks, then obviously that's a major net loss for Iran and its proxy network. But that said, a weakened Hezbollah can still recover. All the other groups in the network that Iran has put up as part of its axis of resistance can have the potential to recover. And that is Iran's hope. I think the Iranians look at the situation and say, which is probably one of the reasons why they're reluctant to get involved into open warfare with Israelis, which is to say Israel right now is fighting multiple fronts. It's fighting in the south, Hamas. It's fighting on the Lebanese border. It's got militants that are firing drones and missiles and rockets at it from Syria, from Iraq, from Yemen. How long can Israel stand the heat? That's the Iranian sort of game plan, this long war. They're not after a quick victory against Israel. They know that's impossible to achieve, not only given Israel's military superiority, but also because of the backing it has in the United States and a good part of Europe. But what the Iranians are gambling on is that they can tire Israel out. That has been Iran's game plan going back to October of last year with the Hamas attack. Two things that Iran has set out to achieve. Don't get into a war with Israelis, because that risks Iran getting entangled in a war with the United States. And number two, make sure that you tire Israel out through this war of attrition. Tire him out. And the Israelis know exactly what this Iranian game plan is about, and they're taking the war to Iran. And that explains the assassinations of the likes of Hassan Nasrallah, of Haniyeh in downtown Tehran, which is a huge humiliation for the Iranians. So both sides kind of know in terms of their anticipation of what the other guy will do. But really, this game of escalate to de-escalate is full of risks in its own.
Do you think Israel sees this as an opportunity? You sort of alluded to that.
It's an opportunity, I think, to go after the network in the region. I don't, as I said earlier, I don't see any signs of the United States having a policy that even suggests that regime change in Tehran hand-in-hand with Israel is part of the agenda. I just don't see that kind of a very ambitious sort of thinking happening in the Biden administration. And it would be hugely ambitious to talk about regime change when you consider the fact that, you know, successive American presidents have failed to do anything serious in terms of changing Iranian behavior since 1979, never mind changing the regime. But that doesn't mean the Israelis can push that agenda. They might not make it all the way to Tehran, but they might get a free hand to do what they're doing in Lebanon elsewhere. What you've seen in Yemen with targeting the Houthis, whenever the Houthis have fired at Israel, now you've seen two rounds of retaliation. That sort of thing can pick up. You see more of it. Israel will need support from the United States to do that. That is politically in Washington much more feasible, where you are sort of having CENTCOM help Israel in sort of these operations in the region hitting pro-Iran militants over a long period of time. That's politically more feasible. It's not going to capture headlines in the United States. It's not going to, you know, interfere with the U.S. election process, which is a major factor right now. And it might just be something that's doable. But the idea of United States suddenly, you know, declaring that now we're going to side with Israel and go all the way in toppling the Iranian regime, even though as you hear some people in Washington make that argument, I just don't see politically that the Biden team is going to go in that direction.
Sure. Thank you so very much for the time and the insight.
Sure. Thank you. Always a pleasure to speak to you.
Alex Fetenko, the founding director of the Iran program at the Middle East Institute.
As the fighting increases between Israel and Hezbollah, the United States is working with airlines to provide additional flights out of Lebanon with more seats for Americans. State Department spokesperson Matthew Miller.
As we often do in these situations, we have directed U.S. citizens who are in Lebanon to register with the State Department for information, and especially for information with how to depart Lebanon. We're providing them whatever information we can. We have had, as of today, around 6,000 American citizens in Lebanon who have registered with us for further information.
Miller said commercial flights are operating, although they are available at times at reduced capacity. He said the U.S. State Department is working with airlines to provide additional flights with more seats for American citizens.
We're following these other stories from around the world. Hundreds of firefighters and volunteers in southern Greece are battling a large wildfire for a third day. The fire has killed two people and devastated a large forested area. The fire service has more than 400 firefighters, assisted by 22 water bombing aircraft, are engaged against the fire.
Cadaver dogs and search crews trudged through knee-deep muck and debris in the mountains of western North Carolina, one of the U.S. states hit by Hurricane Helene. They are looking for victims of the hurricane, one of the deadliest in U.S. history.
The newly elected Japanese prime minister pledged to stick to the vital Japan-U.S. alliance amid growing tension in the region. Chosen as head of the ruling Liberal Democratic Party last week, replacing Fumio Kishida, who stepped down on Tuesday.
Republican U.S. Senator J.D. Vance and Democratic Governor Tim Walz of Minnesota faced off in their first and likely only vice presidential debate before the general election. The two gave a more traditional performance than has been seen on a debate stage in the United States since the emergence of Donald Trump, each giving seemingly well-practiced answers to the various questions asked by moderators while maintaining an air of civility and professionalism. Both tried to sway undecided voters who may have been watching as Election Day approaches.
And finally,
protesto, guardar y hacer guardar la constitución política de los Estados Unidos Mexicanos.
Claudia Sheinbaum took the oath of office as Mexico's first female president in more than 200 years of Mexican independence.
Soy madre, abuela.
She's saying, I am a mother, grandmother, scientist, and woman of faith, and as of today, by the will of the people of Mexico, the constitutional president of the United Mexican States. While Sheinbaum made history on Tuesday, being sworn in as Mexico's first woman president, she faces a tough go, inheriting challenges to quell violence from organized crime and reduce a hefty deficit. Mexico is Latin America's number two economy. The 62-year-old scientist and former mayor of Mexico City will serve a six-year term until 2030.
This has been International Edition on the Voice of America.
On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thank you so much for joining us.
For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com.
in Washington with Alexis Strope. I'm Scott Walterman.